And yeah, we're live. Sportscar Safari podcast. Welcome, everybody. We've got a bit of a different show for you today, a crew show. Got myself, co-editor Andrew Coles. We've got Luke Jaxa, who is with us and is about to die. So we'll see how long he lasts. It is not COVID, he reliably tells me. Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah, it's great. Luckily, we're on the other side of the world. So we're doing
it. I actually had to have a COVID test. So did the right thing, started to get flu-like symptoms, worst man cold ever, and did the right thing by people in the community. We got a COVID test and it was horrid.
And basically in the end they told you to harden up, there's nothing wrong, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
All good. And look, Sportscar Safari is a collaborative process. So we thought we'd get a couple of our mates on board who have been involved in various SCS adventures over the year and have some interesting insights of their own. So we have Andrew Metcalf and George Cheatham joining us. Welcome, boys. How are we going?
Hi. Thank you so much for having us, fellas. What a treat this is.
Oh, and look, and even with the software, you can show their names. So
look at that, their names.
Wow. Watching on the live stream.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Who they are.
Wow.
That's pro. Boys.
Yeah. So how are we doing? What have we got? A sunny day in the UK here. We must talk about the weather because that's the English thing to do as I'm fast learning. Yeah. What's happening? How have we been?
Ruth keeps giving me junk about that. Why do you always talk about the weather? Is that an English thing? Is it, boys?
It's definitely one of the pleasantries that has to be met in every conversation. It's a fantastic day in the UK today. We're using up one of our few sunny days today. So, yeah, it's looking beautiful out the window and I'm sure it won't last. But no, all is well here in London.
Amazing. So, we've got a few little...
Do you reckon the dogs in the UK do that too?
The dogs talk about the weather.
Yeah, you reckon they like sniff each other's butts and oh, hey, hang on. Hey, oh, weather's great today, isn't it? Is that what they do there too?
That's their opener.
Yeah. That's their opener.
I think definitely. So so we're gonna
drugs must be working well.
Well, I sort of put it down to there being actual seasons here. So I'm from the Gold Coast and it just doesn't change. It's like wet and hot or just hot, so the weather doesn't change too much, whereas here it's like, you know, cold, hot, sunny, all in one day, sort of like Melbourne. So
I will say one thing about in the UK, and sorry, we will progress the conversation on from the weather soon, but when there is a nice day, everyone looks out the window and says, geez, that doesn't happen very often, I'd better go and enjoy it. So you get everyone out, maybe not so much in COVID times, but everyone out, you know, making sort of the most of the day. Whereas in Australia, I think a lot of people are a bit like, nah, there'll be another one tomorrow. It'll be fine. So anyway.
Oh, yeah, we ration them a lot here. So I've got two of my housemates have gone to the beach today and we've made big plans to go out to the park tomorrow. So we're definitely, we definitely pick and choose what we do with them. And we make massive plans that could get written off in a second.
So yeah, so I guess now we've got
one. You're working as well, aren't you, George?
Yes, indeed. Inside all day, love that.
Amazing. So we've got a few various subjects to cover. We'll cover. Obviously, we've got two British Grand Prix coming up in the next sort of fortnight, so we're going to get through that. The boys here are quite knowledgeable in Formula One, which I'm not really, so we'll do that. George has had a bit of an interesting experience. George works in the media game and travels usually on the MotoGP circus sort of around the world to all of the races, of which he has not been doing lately. So yeah, we'll touch on that, but I guess we must talk about, because we're probably going to lose Luke in a few minutes when he dies.
Fading.
But there's a plan being hatched. So, Andy, do you want to give us a rundown? We're sort of both in similar situations. We've lived parallel lives in some degree where we both have kind of crappy Italian cars that are holed up on the other side of the world that we're too attached to sell, but doesn't really make any sense to keep. And there's a plan in the works. What's going on there? What do you have?
Basically, I've got a 1969 1750 GTV that needs sort of storage, and I'm in this conundrum where these old cars, they need to be used to sort of stay in decent condition, otherwise, you know, things perish. And it just, I mean, you don't use it for 2 weeks and it's painful to start, like it, like let alone I've lived here for 4 and a bit years now, so perish the thought of like leaving that in the garage for 4 years not being used. It'd be absolute carnage when I, when you go to start it. So
3 days go by and a few lines hatched. Gone and it catches on fire.
Yeah, it's so bad like that, isn't it? And so yeah, I won't go into details of how many times I've been left stranded by various sorts of Italian cars, but Luke has kindly offered, he has some garage space, so the agreement is that it's getting shipped over to him. So currently it's in Melbourne being kept by my friend Spencer, and prior to that George, who were again Italian and German car fans. And so it's seemingly working its way around Australia, so I guess next stop is Perth after this. But it's proving a bit difficult with COVID happening and the border between South Oz and Melbourne being closed. I think the initial plan was, I think Luke was going to try and fly down and drive it back, which is ballsy in itself. Brave. I've tried. Yeah, so I've done that twice from Melbourne to Queensland and failed both times.
that would have been... The 105 would be luxury. I bought a Leyland mini panel van from Melbourne once and flew over to Melbourne, bought it sight unseen, like just saw it on the internet, bought it, flew over, caught a train from the airport down to the southeastern side of Melbourne, picked it up, and he's like, oh, yeah, cool. Like, you know, how are you going back to Adelaide? And I'm like, I'm driving it. He's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I'm driving it. And of course, little mini 4-speed gearbox, small fuel tank with a fuel gauge that didn't work. I spent like every town was like, stop, put in 5 liters of fuel, keep going. So I'm sure it would have been a much more enjoyable experience than that one. Sitting at, I don't know, 5,500 revs in fourth gear, trying to keep up with everything. It was pretty nuts.
But hey, at least if you get home, you know that it's good. Like, you know that it's pretty good. Like,
and I figured with a mini anyway, even if it broke down, you just push it. Be fine.
Exactly. So yeah, I just love the fact that you're obviously going to get it trucked over to Adelaide now, and we're sort of sorting the details out, but I just love the fact that, you know, it's essential workers only over the border, and I love the fact that getting a 105 Alpha from Melbourne to Adelaide is absolutely essential, which I agree it is, and I think most people would tend to agree. So boys, Formula One this weekend, run us through the situation we're in, because we have two British Grand Prix coming up. We've had two Austrian Grand Prix, where we had a Styrian Grand Prix. We've got Silverstone this weekend. We've got Silverstone the next weekend. Yeah, what's it going to look like? What's going to happen, do you reckon?
Ooh, my hope is for some amazing racing and some absolute carnage. I think we've had a bit of a track record in the past couple of years with Silverstone having an appetite for tyres. So yeah, I'm expecting big things, to be honest. I think it's the home race for a lot of teams, so hopefully everyone's going to show up and, you know, really give it their all. But I'm hoping for some great racing.
Awesome. Yeah. So what's what do you reckon, Andy? What's happening?
I mean, there's a few things happening. I think it'd be pretty much a Mercedes whitewash, as everything has been almost for the past five years. It'll be an interesting midfield race, I think. I'm interested to see how the racing points go, essentially being last year's Mercedes, but because they're not really stacking up how I thought they were throughout the season. Like the first, you'd expect them to take third and fourth almost every race by nature, but it hasn't quite been that way going through. And the McLarens, the new Golf sponsorship, should be pretty cool. I don't think it's the same company, though. I read somewhere that it's like basically a licensing deal, like Golf went under or something.
Okay.
And then this company now is like a rebranded version of the same thing. That's just, it's not the full the full cycle, so to speak, oil company. It's just like petrol stations rebranding other people's fuel. But hey, who cares? It'll look cool.
Yeah. Is that livery getting wheeled out for this weekend? Is that the vibe?
I think there's a couple of small bits on the McLarens, and then with a view to putting it on fully. I also hope Williams do something good too.
Yeah, well, what do you think the
home race for them?
I was going to say, like, what do you think the atmosphere in the paddock is going to be like? Because you think about coming into this, obviously, you've got the whole COVID situation, but you think about the team. So you've got McLaren, who have obviously signed Danny Ric, which is awesome, but they are themselves facing some monumental problems. You know, they've sort of shed a third of their workforce. You've got Racing Point, who are rebranding as Aston Martin, but I read yesterday literally Aston Martin have announced a quarterly loss in 2021 of something like, you know, in the 200s of millions of pounds, and they've, you know, so I know obviously Formula One team is different to the road car, but you've got this, and basically all of the kind of teams that are based within shouting distance of Silverstone all are going through pretty major sort of upheavals and troubles and sort of rough seas ahead, and the meanwhile, you've got Mercedes just kind of steamrolling through everything like like nothing's going on.
I think what this is going to really demonstrate because of that is the, I guess, the weaknesses in everyone's cars, because they can't put as much money and time or effort because, you know, they're kind of not really developing the cars at the same pace that they really would. Mm. Where I think that's where maybe Williams might struggle, like at Silverstone especially, because it's a very, very, very fast track. And they've got quite a draggy car this year. So, you know, although they did well last race, you know, that track is nowhere near as dependent on high speed as what Silverstone is, and high speed cornering. So interesting seeing how they go. But yeah, I think it'll really highlight where the cars are really at and where they're going to be at for the year. So I think that's where a bit of that budget and COVID stuff will come in.
Mm. And how would you be being Carlos Sainz finally signing for Ferrari, and then anyway.
Good. Yeah, what are you saying? Then you got Alonso coming back next year. But Luke, did you listen to the George Russell episode of Beyond the Grid yesterday? Is that where you got the Williams draggy car thing from? Oh,
no. Inside knowledge.
I haven't listened to that one yet. Is that George Russell's on that one, is he?
Yeah, so he was on there and he was saying how he was talking about the Hungaroring and how the Williams went quite well there, but he said it's because it's not as fast of a track and that the Williams is quite a draggy car for this year. And so he almost said that verbatim.
Traditionally, the Williams has always had like poor high speed, and like that track was very much like that. So, No, I think I was just from watching too much of the coverage this year.
So it's going to be an interesting thing too. Obviously, we have a British Grand Prix, and then we're going to do it again the weekend after. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be great. So,
yeah.
George, why don't you touch on your role in MotoGP? Why were you at? How many races were you at last year? Yeah,
I did. I started on race 6. So my first race was in Mugello, which was the best place to get inducted into MotoGP I could imagine. Just like the rolling hills of Tuscany going, this is fantastic. I assume everything's going to be like this. So a bit of background for anyone watching. I used to work with Andrew at a media agency for classic car clubs, then moved across to Car Throttle, who you might know if you're watching on YouTube and like cheap car challenges, or if you like internet memes on Instagram, they do a lot of those.
MX5s.
Exactly, like Rocketeer MX5s, yeah. So I moved across to them about a year ago, and we've got a contract with a certain energy drink manufacturer to make some vlogs from the MotoGP bike racing. So in that comes all sorts of amazing travel. So like I was saying, flew out to Mugello last year and then did, I think, 14 races towards the end of the season. So that was fantastic. And yeah, we've got a contract again to do work for this season. So we started the season out in Qatar back in March, and we basically got an email like the night before we went out that because the MotoGP riders had been testing a week or two before we flew out, that when these travel restrictions came in, banning people from Spain and Italy, that half the teams or half the riders couldn't actually travel to do the race. So they had this scenario where actually the Moto2 and Moto3 classes had been testing there the weeks before. So they were all in Qatar, but the MotoGP boys weren't. So they had this race weekend where we had no MotoGP, but we had the other classes. So we were out there making this video. And it was the weirdest thing. Like, we had all these plans to do MotoGP filming, and we had to turn everything on its head. And that was really the start of COVID making its presence known for us in the paddock and in motorsport in general. So fast forward a few months, we've had a refreshed calendar with MotoGP, and we've just had a doubleheader out in Jerez in Spain. So we sent a crew out there to make some videos, and then we've got some really exciting travel coming up. We're going to next Wednesday, we're flying out to Brno in the Czech Republic. And it kind of highlights that what a real like education this has been for me. I've been like an armchair Formula One fan and motorsport fan most of my life, but it's only really taken off now. And I'd never heard of I think it's Autodromo Brno, just in the south of the Czech Republic. And we went there for the first time last year, and I was blown away with what an amazing track it was. It was like this gorgeous like thing crawling through the hills. It was amazing. So we've got three races coming up. We've got Brno next week, and then double Austria. So it should be really fun. I am absolutely buzzing to get traveling again. Obviously, it's going to be a bit strange with COVID regulations and how that goes in the paddock. But yeah, it should be a really good time. And hopefully to see some racing again and hear those bikes in person will be just fantastic. I think one of the things people, like for me and a lot of people as car fans, bike racing doesn't really get the same kind of coverage or have that same profile. So actually doing a season of MotoGP has really opened my eyes to it, because these things are massive horsepower, massive engines, like no like mufflers or anything. Like, yeah, the sound of them is just unreal. Like, you'll be stood in the stands and your chest is shaking. It's really, really cool.
Because you, George, you weren't really a bike guy like when you started this. I mean, you're kind of a bit like me, that you have a passing interest in bikes, and I'm, you know, we won't share the photos, but I remember you riding my Vespa for the first time, and I can definitely say that you are not an experienced motorcyclist. But to be fair, you didn't nearly mono it off the back like Andy did. But anyway, that's okay. But yeah, so what was it like, you know, coming into a MotoGP paddock, sort of the top tier of global motorsport, not really knowing about about bikes and learning at that level? How did you go? I think
at the beginning,
for a sec.
With any kind of new position or new job, I think there's a period of just sucking and just, you know, battling it out. But being in that top level was so interesting. Like, there's a whole new world of things that I'd kind of experienced through watching Formula One. Like, there's a certain understanding you have of the paddock lifestyle and things. But being in that level was just incredible. Like, the access we have to the riders is really, really good. So everyone's been super amenable to us, and we've been able to do some exciting things. There was one challenge that the guys had done just before I joined the team with one of the Ducati riders, Andrea Dovizioso, who's like their lead. Imagine like the Seb Vettel of MotoGP. Like, there's so many similarities. They did an airbag challenge with him. Like, the riders have these airbags in their suits, and our presenter and him did this challenge where they would like distract each other and then set off the other person's airbag. So like we were doing things like that, and it was just, you never really expect to go in at that kind of level, like really going in for the top tier stuff. So it's been fantastic. Like, it's been so cool.
George, you've bloody flown in a bloody private MotoGP plane with the riders. Like, that's pretty rad.
Yeah.
That's the one thing when I was like, you know what? At a race series, at a meet, you're kind of always like, I could try and probably blag myself into the pits or the paddock or something. But you can't blag yourself onto the MotoGP jet flying to race.
Yeah, there's a certain level of being on the inside. I tell you what, that was a really funny flight. That was from Tokyo to Melbourne. Last year, so end of last year. And we were sat on the plane, and it was fantastic. Like, they had the little, like, oh, I forget what they're called, but you know the things they put over the top of the chairs? Like, used to be like when men had the Brill cream in their hair and it didn't mess up the seats. But they had branded MotoGP ones of them, and we got like these little key rings and stuff that's still on my rucksack to this day. But we were sat on the plane, and it was a little delayed in taking off. And we're like, that's a bit weird. I didn't think too much of it. And then you see on Instagram that all the riders have been posing in the captain's chair. That's why we're a bit late taking off. And we're just like, okay, right, okay, cool. This is the world we're in right now. But it was fantastic. Like, I can't remember which teams, but not exactly who was on the plane, but we had several riders on the plane, but all the crew as well. So it is everything that people say, like one big traveling family. Like, it's the same faces, it's the same people all on the same planes, but it's cool. Like, it's not
a
bad job.
Is it one big plane? Just
for this one, it was a chartered flight. For the plane nerds out there, I forget what plane it was, but it was one massive plane that they chartered, and I think.
But we're talking like 737, aren't we? Not like sort of small, sort of 12-seater little charter plane.
I think it was an A380. It's proper.
380.
Oh, wow.
It was one of the big, right. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the A380 is the big domey one, isn't it?
Yeah. That would have been a rowdy flight. That would have been very rowdy.
It was a night flight.
I was asking, do they charter one for between every sort of race for all the teams or?
No, that was just for what we call the flyaway races. So we went in September, October last year. In the space of 5 weeks, we did Thailand, Japan, Australia, and Malaysia. And then it was just the kind of internal bits. So from Japan to Australia, then Australia to Malaysia. That was all we did the charter for. But it would be amazing to do that for everywhere. But there's a lot of people from around Europe to get to the same place. But
you never know. Flyaway races. You never know now in COVID, and I guess the you know, Dawn are probably going through this, but that could be a way of maintaining a bubble if you're going to different venues and different tracks, is by keeping everyone together in the one plane at the one airport and, you know, one processing. Like, that actually could be a way of doing it.
That was discussed as well. Like,
bubbles that was so much smaller.
Sorry?
But aren't the bubbles, like, quite small? Like, you see the F1 bubbles and they say it's only, you know, five or so people. So that's actually sort of funny, right? So if you're with five people, that's your bubble. But then you get on this flight, you sat next to someone who isn't in that bubble. Like, you've just spent the whole week trying to not
cross contamination. It's an interesting one about the bubbles, though, because what we're seeing in the paddock at the moment is like the way they're doing like the media scrums that you normally get. It's so different to how it used to be. But also, you can't get riders doing interviews together at the moment. That's part of the policy that they're keeping them separate. And then they've got their own kind of pit garages. So everything's really separate at the moment. And there's like daily COVID tests and everything, like temperature scanned when you go into the track. So
they're having the thing shoved up their nose every day. Wow.
I wouldn't comment and say officially. I don't know what the actual process is. But I know they're having the temperature scanned. And I know there is testing involved in it, but I would never comment for Dawna. If we are back in the paddock in the next few weeks, I will be getting one, so I'm bracing myself for that. But if that's the case, it signals that we're back in the paddock and there's some normality to things. So it's a small.
I think it's a fair trade-off. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I think that's good. So I guess we need to, you know, and this is a subject we need to explain, that we have to talk about cheap Boxsters. We've come this far. We're 25 minutes into this show.
I'm impressed you guys have made it this far, to be honest.
Yes, so am I. Yeah, it's not bad. So I guess for people listening, no, we're saving the best to last. You know, I've obviously, you know, we've been sort of following the story, and SES purchased a very cheap Boxer, but it was actually Andrew Metcalf here on the podcast that actually kind of first planted that seed. And it was when he bought one and messaged me and said, hey, come check this thing out. And I remember, Andy, I think I remember actually laughing at you, thinking you're mad.
Yeah, you did laugh at me. You did laugh at me.
And then I was like, you're mad, like, whatever. And then we went and had a look at this car and I was like, actually, this is pretty nice. I kind of like it. And then we did that trip to Paris. We did a weekend sort of to Paris and back in it. And we sat on, you know, speeds down to Paris and back, and it was really good. And I was like, actually, I think the world is crazy. Do you want to, Boxsters, how did this happen? How did you get into it?
Where do I start? I'm not sure, actually. It's sort of, you know, it starts off, you sort of start looking at what you can and can't afford, and then what's fun, what's underpriced, and that sort of thing. And so I think I started off looking at 996s, and 996s are quite good value here. They're like 10,000-15,000 pounds, or they were about 18 months ago, and they've sort of jumped back up since. And then, you know, budgets and priorities change. And then I was looking at Z3s, Z4s. And then, I mean, when I was looking at 996s, I did a fair bit of IMS research, and they run a M96 motor, which is the same as what the Boxsters have. It sort of told myself that I don't think that, like, if it's going to blow, it would have blown by now is the reasoning and justification I had. And so started looking semi-seriously about a year or so ago. And you just see cars that pop up. And I was looking at, like I said, Z3s, Z4s. Had a look at a couple. I mean, the way I was looking at it was that a Boxster is a purpose-designed sports car from the ground up. It's designed purely to be a sports car, whereas the Z3, Z4 has sort of a compromised architecture to it. It's a 3 Series that's sort of built into a sports car. I know some people may not enjoy me saying that. And then...
But it's the truth.
Yeah, it means parts and everything are a lot cheaper, but it means overall the whole thing's, you know, slightly compromised to a degree. And so, yeah, I started looking at Boxsters, got more and more serious, and then I saw a really nice one pop up on the forum, and next minute I'd bought it. So, yeah, I haven't looked back since. They're such great cars. Really sort of blowing the trumpet of Boxsters here, and I think that's why you ended up buying one. But they handle nice, they sort of meet the criteria. They've got 2 boots, which are pretty big. They're not that crazy expensive to run, and I figured if it blew up at whatever I paid for it, then I could sort of live with that, whereas I couldn't live with that as much as if I bought a 996 or a 997 for like 10,000 to 20,000 pounds and had a 10,000 to 20,000 pound bill for a rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess an update of mine. I've done over the weekend. We've got it running. It passed the MOT last Friday. Got it running, and yeah, I've done about 400 miles in it. And I've just been, you know, sort of back up everything you said. I've been obviously I'm touch wood. I've ruined it now. It's gonna go on. Gonna lunch itself today, I know, but like I've been amazed at how good it is to like to drive, how well it cruises. It's a bit it's not quite as fizzy as I'd like, I guess, you know, used to sort of Fiats and Alphas, and in the twisties I kind of want something a bit more like George's Renault, which we can touch on, which is kind of a bit fizzier and a bit edgier, and the box is kind of a bit more chilled and relaxed. But the trade-off is that on the motorway and cruising and road trips, it's a beautiful cruising car. It's at 80-90-100 mile an hour, like, you know, nobody's business. And I've been really, really genuinely surprised at how easy it is to work on and how affordable the parts are and how, just really everything has been easier than I expected, easier and cheaper than I expected it to be. So it's, yeah, great, great cars. And
I think the reasons for us owning them are quite similar. You want something that can cruise because, I mean, we're both looking at doing fairly extended driving in it. So you want something that can cruise and nail a good few hundred miles a day, but then when you get to something fun, you can have some fun. Whereas like if you had an Elise, you'd be pretty knackered if you did 800 miles in a day. Worth it though, I think probably. But
yeah. But also when you've got significant others with you and, you know, they might not necessarily see the benefits of putting up with 8 hours of bone shaking harshness and sweating for that joy of the twisty roads, which, you know, and this is a good, I think it's a good lifestyle car in a sense of you arrived good and willing and comfortable, you know, which is worth, you know, counts for a lot.
Yeah, so the nail in the coffin for an older car was I went down to Goodwood a couple of years ago with my friend Giles and he's got a 1600 Junior 105. And I'd been toying with the idea of bringing mine over here and sort of using that for, you know, it's got a 5-speed gearbox. So, you know, it can do some sort of cruising. But if you go in, if you've driven in that for a couple of hours, you just arrive quite knackered. And my girlfriend and I, we daily drove 105s for like 4 years from like 2012 to 2016 on the Gold Coast. That like, I've had my time with them there. Quite exhausting, especially on like long distance, because the Julia Supra I had, you're cruising at like 60 or 70 miles an hour in that, and you're pulling 4,000 RPM. So it's, yeah, so you got RPM. Wind noise is not too bad, but it's still loud because it's a 60s car, and it's an ordeal.
Mate,
it's worth it at times.
Yeah, it is. And I guess, you know, for those two points, I guess daily driving old classic cars in Australia is a nightmare because, you know, when I used to take my, you know, commute my Fiat to work, sometimes you'd need to take a different shirt in summer because you'd just turn up so sweaty from sort of being in this car that you'd have to have a change of clothes before you go out to dinner. So, you know, you drive and you park around the corner from the restaurant and you quickly get changed and have a sort of a pommy shower and go into dinner. And that's, you just kind of thought that was normal. Whereas, yeah, here it's different. But I think as well for people in Australia that, you know, I think the use case of cars in the UK is very different to Australia. I think in Australia, you can kind of have a classic because everything is a bit more centralized. So you sort of shoot out and you'll do a short drive. Whereas to get, I mean, unless you live in Wales or Scotland or the Cotswolds or somewhere, like if you live anywhere in London or where we do, you've got a good solid 2 hours of boring motorway before you get to anything that's worth driving in. Yeah. And yeah, you need to get there kind of feeling good, not knackered.
I think that's the thing that you guys have nailed with, you know, the eternal affordable performance kind of thing. Is that you've actually like tailored it to the UK situation really well, because it is like that road trip thing. If you want to be comfortable driving everywhere, and it sounds weird, but it's like everything is motorway in the UK until you get to the good bits. And so like that's, it makes so much sense to have a car that has actually very few compromises. Like maybe you can't put a massive suitcase in it, but you can be creative with your weekend bags. And so there's actually not much you miss out on there. And for the price you guys got them for as well, like it's kind of like the ultimate solution to it. Like, I don't know how you could do better.
So mate, when are you getting one?
for those listening in, I have been in a group chat with these fellas, and of course now everything is Boxster. So I've been saying that, you know, but just by, I don't know, by osmosis, that it's probably going to happen that one comes my way at some point. We call this non-consensual Boxster ownership. So I would love a Porsche. Like, that would be great. You know, that would be just fantastic. But I think the right one at the right time. Like, at the moment, I don't need a Boxster or that kind of equivalent there. Like, it'd be great to have one of the later Caymans. Like, that would be kind of the goals there. Get some like suction mounts to put the bike on the back and do all of that. I just think that right now would be amazing.
Just a GT4 would do it, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not picky. Like, I'll take
just PCP one, George. Just sign the form and get one. You can do it.
All right.
Be fine.
Okay. Have you reserved a handle yet? Are you Cayman _ George, or
I don't want to give it away until the official go live date, because you in the background, so I want to make sure it's either a GT4 GTS, but I don't want to tell
anyone. So George, do you wanna, what if Give okay, we've just given you a 10-minute sales pitch on why we've made the right choice. Your sales pitch on why you've made the right choice. What have you got?
I don't think I'll need 10 minutes. so I drive a Mark III.
Have you got the PowerPoint still? Or
I do. So if you'll adjust your attention over here, it's just noise. So I drive a Mark III Renault Sport Clio 200. For the nerds out there, it's a Silverstone GP edition, which is a
very topical for this weekend.
Exactly. just saying, just turn up outside the gates and take a picture. but yeah, it's a Silverstone GP edition, which is a cup chassis, full fat, which means it's got the uncomfortable / more performance orientated chassis, the better steering rack. And it's also got the yellow dot Recaros, which is the important thing. Yeah, which, praise be to the Recaros, we love those. Except for on a hot day, God, they are figure hugging. But it's also got all the bits and bobs that you need to. It's got the Bluetooth, it's got the RS monitor, which does like your lap times, lateral Gs, 0 to 60. I don't know why you'd need that, but it's got it. So yeah, it's my daily driver. I've wanted one for years. Like, my athletics coach when I was a teenager had one, and I just thought that's the coolest thing. Like, I loved the styling of the 200s because I just thought they looked a little bit different.
Those flared guards. And like, I don't want to try and bring everything back to Porsche, but I've said this on multiple times. It's like, it is the GT3 RS of Renaults. Like, you look at it and it's got the yellow calipers, it's got the pumped guards, it's got the yellow seat belts, it's got the Recaros, the Alcantara everywhere. Like, it has that real vibe to it, which no one else has really nailed other than Porsche. So I think it's a cool thing.
Thank you.
It's good
fun. I appreciate
that.
If you're going to liken it to anything, I will absolutely take that. That is cool.
Especially when you see them in like Viper green with yellow highlights, and you go, Like, how did that happen? Did they have a mole on the inside? Are they just massive GT3 nerds, or is it the other way around? But they've literally replicated the exact Porsche color palette into Clio 200s.
Yeah. I would hope so. Like, you know, the car industry, it's not that big. Everyone's a fan of everything. So I like to think that there's someone going, right, we're gonna do that for this little car, for this little city car. But it is what it is. Everyone knows about the Clios and what they're good for, what they're bad at. But I've got it as a city car. Like, it's a runaround in London. I bought it so I could do airport trips and a lot of motorway miles. So, you know, sometimes I do regret the cup chassis on the motorway. But then I was meeting up with you, Andrew, the other week. And I drove my mum's 1 Series. And I was in there going, oh, this thing feels like jelly. Like, I want to be bouncing around, like, with my ears bleeding. So it's cool. Like, it's good fun. There are the obvious elephants in the room of Renault reliability. I heard something on one of the Facebook channels which made me laugh. That was, you know, they're not that bad. It's just the parts that were made in France. And I like to think so far I've had it since
Bosch bits.
Exactly. At least it hasn't got an IMS bearing that could go pop. But
oh, calm down.
I didn't mean that as a slight. It's just one thing that it does. I don't have
to worry. Can we censor that out, Andrew? Are we able to censor that?
Yeah, we'll bleep that bit out. Yeah.
We've just suddenly not gone live anymore.
George is like, hello, hello. Hi, guys. Well, that's that, isn't it? So no, we'll bring
it. How's he died?
I'm back, boys. I'll tie it up pretty quickly, but I've had it since January as like a runaround, and it's been awesome. Like, I sometimes make jokes about it or whinge, but I don't actually think I'd want anything else at the moment. Like, it's so aggressive. It's such a violent little car, which is kind of at odds to like my kind of personality, but I do like having this little thing that's a bit aggressive. I like to think of my ownership experience as being fairly low drama, but actually when you break it down, it's been fairly dramatic. The main thing that's gone wrong was that the flexi pipes on the exhaust manifold have blown. So it's like these two little honeycomb bits that come down from the manifold, and then they are just a bit rubbish, so they wear and they kind of split. And I remember it really clearly because I'm a little bit like, it's my first like nice car that I'm super proud of, so I'm obviously a bit more attentive than most, to put it nicely. I've been out on a drive with some of the guys from my company, and we've been doing rides around in everyone's cars, so been getting fairly well acquainted with the red line. And then we did a cruise over to the local Nando's, because obviously that's what you do in affordable performance cars, is go get some chicken. And my boss at the time was stood at the entrance to this it's like retail park where the food was, and I was at the barrier, and he goes, oh yeah, rev it. So I revved it, and I had the window open. I thought, oh, that sounded really good. It didn't sound that good this morning. And so ended up driving on it for a couple of days, actually, and got the AA out, and they said, oh yeah, your flexi pipes are blowing, so that's fine. I was like, okay, cool, we'll just, you know, chop those off and jobs are good. And but as with any kind of big engine shoehorned into a tight package, there's a certain amount of moving around that needs to be done to do that. So the whole thing was a subframe off job, and I'm just there going, oh god. And this was the week before lockdown in the UK, so mid to late March. So to fix that, what I've done is I've put a KTR Racing exhaust manifold on the car, which is a little like unit down in the south of England. So it's got wider pipes than standard, which is fantastic for airflow and everything. And I was going through a bit of a breakup at the time, so to lift my spirits, I thought, actually, you know what I need now is a resonated cat-back exhaust as well. So... So load it all up in the car, take it to the garage, they fit everything and sorted it, remapped it, because it gets a bit of a flat spot. And, you know, I like to say to people, oh, I've just ruined it now, because it's so loud and it drones a bit on the motorway.
It is rather loud, yeah.
It's a little bit, it's obvious, we could say that much. But I love it. Like, there is nothing better than like coming back from like taking the bike down to Richmond Park, like loading it up. You can do all that. There's loads of space. And then just coming across the Chiswick Bridge going bang, 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 bang. That's fun. So
it is fun. And I think we were having this, you know, sort of chatting about this the other week, but it is one of those cars that if you're at the service station and you know, like a guy pulls up in a GT3 or like a 458 Speziale or something, like they look at that Clio and go like, oh yeah, he knows what's going on. Like it's cool. It's that kind of car. It's on that wavelength. So I think.
Thank you. Yeah, that's kind of it. And I think the spec is a little bit more restrained than others. So, you know, it doesn't draw too much attention to it unless you can hear. But yeah, it's a little bit more modest. And like end of the day, it's a Clio, but it's rad and it's a little bit aggressive.
It's not Viper Green or anything.
That's wonderful on someone else's car. But for the thing I have to drive, like I think silver, black wheels, loud exhaust, fine by me.
Done. So
it's like, you know, maybe Tuesday mornings where you don't want to be, you know, too much of an extrovert, it's sort of a nice compromise for that. Like
exactly,
it'd be pretty intense having like a fully winged GT2 like GT2 911 and just going down and getting coffee if you're not really feeling like an all-out ordeal.
That's it. Like there's some cars that, you know, a lot of cars these days can be done, like can be used for everything. We had, through work, I had the Renault Sport Mégane 300 Trophy last year, which was just one that red and white one that did the Nürburgring times. So we had that, and that thing's a weapon. But I was coming back from dinner like one night in that, and it was so stiff and it was so undertired that the ride, and with the suspension, it was just crashy. And it didn't do that thing where it couldn't do both, which like was fine, but for a car of that price point, and you know, it just felt very compromised.
Yeah. That's right. This man, I think there's the foundations of a Cayman owner in there somewhere. You need a car that can do both. You've just said that yourself with your own words. You need to be able to do both. And
mate, car life.
We have the car for you.
Life and car life is all about compromise. And at the moment, my car life is very compromised. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind a Cayman in the future. That would be cool. Yeah. So if anyone wants to send me recommendations for Caymans, go on, let's do it.
or a perfect tool for each job. You know, you have a load lugger for that, but then you have a quite dedicated sports car for sports car fun.
Actually, you have raised the point that the correct answer really is a car for each purpose. That is the correct answer. But anyway.
Well, that's why I was like, you know, when I was talking to you guys the other month about looking at a fun classic for the city, because the Boxster isn't great around bumps or anything like that, and you sort of don't want to knock it anywhere, and visibility is not ideal with the roof